Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan McPherson. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, we are broadcasting from the beautiful Regis Executive Suites here in Sandy Springs, Georgia. As a reminder, make sure you're connected with us on social media, Twitter at Business Radio X. Also, you can follow the show, Atlanta Business Radio, at Atlanta Biz Radio, Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. And check us out on Facebook and interact with us there. Leave your thoughts and comments, and you can see the photos of our in-studio guests. And now it's my distinct pleasure to welcome to the Business Radio X flagship studio two gentlemen here today. First, let's say hello to Brian M. Douglas with Brian M. Douglas and Associates. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Ryan.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. It's a Friday here, Atlanta Business Radio, and look forward to talking about some estate planning. Is that what you're most an expert in, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll get into that in just a moment, but let's also introduce Mike Pearson. He is an information security strategist with CBI.
Strategist, yeah.
Strategist. So, yep. Explain that to our listeners. What is an information security strategist?
Well, an information security strategist is really someone who can go into any organization at a high level and understand all the business requirements to achieve more or reduce risk inside of an organization in the information security side of the house.
Risk, yeah, that's something that all organizations are have to overcome, and you're able to do that through the digital platforms.
That's
right.
Correct.
All right,
that's
so great. All right, well, stick with us, please, as we now turn our attention back to Brian. He is an attorney with Brian M. Douglas and Associates, where he helps people with their legal needs and their business. And tell us more about your practice, Brian. What exactly are you doing?
Well, we focus on estate planning, asset protection, you know, legacy planning, how people define, how families define that. So we plan for the known, we plan for the unknown. We work with businesses and small business owners to deal with succession planning, whether they want to pass a business down to a family member, whether they're going to eventually sell it, you know, all those things. There's levels of planning, there's tax planning, there's asset protection planning from a liability standpoint. You know, we're talking about cyber liability, mm-hmm. which is becoming a huge thing. I know my malpractice carrier wants to put riders on my malpractice policy that has to deal with specifically with cybersecurity and,
right.
and data breaches after everything has happened with some of the big cases that we've known about.
So why are you so passionate about estate planning?
Estate planning is really a way that you can help people in some of the worst times that they have. And it's a kind of an interesting story. The day I got my bar results was, ironically, it was Halloween. It was October 31st.
I'll never forget it.
Many years ago. Yeah. I'll never forget it for a lot of reasons. That's back when they mailed it to you. It wasn't online or anything like that. It was a really great day. Maybe one of the best that I've ever had in my life. You know, mm-hmm. this accomplishment, all this hard work.
Yes, it should be.
Had come to fruition and the fruits of my labor were right there. And I got a call that night from my mother. And I thought maybe it was about 10 o'clock and she was on the West Coast. So I thought maybe she was just calling to congratulate me and, you know, maybe knowing that I'd go out and celebrate or something like that, wait until later. And as soon as I answered the phone, I could hear it in her voice. There was something wrong. And it was her dad. Mm. So her father was diagnosed with terminal cancer that day. It was October 31st, and he decided he wasn't going to fight it. He had lung cancer, had gotten into lymph nodes, so on and so forth. And it was hard for us, you know, and it's always hard. I mean, and he was gone by Valentine's Day the next year. So he went very quick. But, of course, being the attorney in the family, they all turned to me, and I had just got my bar results. And I was, you know, so number one, I had to get a crash course in a lot of things. But number two, it really gave me an opportunity to see how important the planning was and the opportunities that we had to do things with my grandfather, to make the plans, and to get everything in order. Then I thought, well, most people don't have that. Most people don't get that warning sign. Most people don't get an opportunity to say, hey, you've got 3 days, 30 days, 60 days, whatever. Mm-hmm. People go to work and never come home. Heart attacks happen. All these terrible things happen. With no planning involved, it's absolute chaos for the family. So my legal career started in a very unique way with that particular topic. And then I saw the comfort, despite all the pain and the sadness that we had, I saw the comfort that it brought because everything was taken care of and everything was done. And you didn't have my grandmother running around and my aunts and uncles and my mom having to deal with the problems mm-hmm. and chase that stuff down while you're trying to grieve or while you're trying to take care yeah. of your family.
Yeah, so it was an aha moment for you, and you kind of opened a door to you into a legal career based upon some personal experiences.
Exactly.
And that moment when you got your bar certificate and you knew your legal path you wanted to go on, did you go into the corporate world and working for a big law firm, or did you hang your own shingle right out of the gate?
Hung it right out of the gate.
Yes, right. So that's amazing, too. So talk us about that journey. What made you want to be that entrepreneur?
Well, I used to work for a little company called Halliburton.
Oh, they're pretty little,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you may have heard of them. And I worked in corporate America, and I kind of did my tenure there, I say.
Yeah.
And I went through the ups and downs, and, you know, my division, my company was owned by Halliburton, the division, you know, was very much manufacturing. This was back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So manufacturing in the United States is, it's a very interesting topic anyway, especially back then. There was a lot of outsourcing became a very popular thing. You know, it wasn't going to China. It was going to India back then. That was a big thing. And so I had to make decisions about where I was going to stay. You know, you see the manufacturing kind of business cycles of it's feast or famine.
Yes.
You're either so busy with orders because something's going on in the world or the economy is good and it's great and everything. You can't just make enough of whatever you mm-hmm. make, or there's nothing to do.
Right.
You know? And I saw both sides. So I saw the rifts. They didn't call them rifts then. They were layoffs. But, the reduction in force, sorry, we've got to cut heads. We've got to, mm-hmm. realign the budget. I saw all that. I went through a merger. I've seen, one company acquired another. And I just saw it all. And when I decided to leave that and kind of further my education and go in a different direction, I realized that I probably didn't want to end up back in corporate America.
Right. Now that makes sense. And then, so when did you found, when was the origination date of your Brian M. Douglas and Associates?
2003.
So 2003. So you've been in business this long now, right?
I've been in
this. What are some of the secrets to running a successful solo law practice?
You've got to have great people. That's probably the biggest secret, and I don't know that it's a secret.
No, but a good team around you, right?
Yeah. I mean, just my team means the world to me, and they make all the difference in the world. And having the right people, and it's hard to do. It's a hard balance to get. My longest employee has been with me since, 2004.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a testament to the good work and then the culture that you're creating for your staff, for sure.
Yeah.
And there may be a young lawyer out there listening to the program today who's thinking about going out on their own, but it can be fearful and overwhelming. And you're a testament to that. You can make it happen if you just do it the right way, for
correct.
Sure. So very good. So let's dive in a little further to about estate planning. What are those three must-haves that everyone should have for their estate plan?
I think everybody that's old enough to vote, since we got a presidential election coming up, you can use that as a marker. Everyone should have three documents at the very least. They should have a will, they should have a power of attorney for financial matters, and they should have a healthcare power of attorney or healthcare directive. Mm-hmm. The will is what takes care of your assets in the event that you pass away. It's where your money goes. If you have minor children, it addresses guardianship issues with that. Who gets your kids? I get that phone call all the time. New parents, maybe they got a 1 or 2 year old. They're taking the first vacation down to Jamaica, leaving the baby with grandma for the first time. And mom has that aha moment of mm-hmm. what happens if, the big if. And it's the probability of those things happening, those tragic, the Titanic sinking kind of things. They're very low, but, especially first time new mothers, they think about things like that as mm-hmm. as they should. They're designed mm-hmm. to do so. So I get those phone calls all the time. And what happens if, where do my kids go? And it's usually followed up with, kind of dot, dot, dot. I don't want them to go to my husband's family. So that's kind of the funny side of that story, because I can almost predict when it happens in the phone call.
Yes, I bet. Right. So a will, a power of attorney, and a healthcare directive of some kind if something should happen to you.
Yep.
But that sounds like it should only be for a family person. What if you're a guy like me? I'm single. I rent a home. I don't have any kids. I mean, when I die, where is all my stuff going to go to? I don't need it to go to anyone.
Well, that becomes the question for you. Where do you care where it goes?
Not really.
Do you care if it goes to
Goodwill? All my stuff can go to the Goodwill, I guess.
Well, okay. But so I'm going to tell you something you don't already know. The state of Georgia has taken the liberty of writing a will for you.
They have done this.
If you don't have one, they've taken care of it.
So they kind of have like a secret power of attorney that says if this person has not identified where their belongings go to or their assets, the state has the right to come in and direct it to go somewhere.
Correct.
Wow.
So now the question is, now that you know that the state's written this will for, do you have any idea what it says?
No, I do not.
Okay, so maybe it says it goes to Brian. I mean, I hope so. I don't know enough people down under the Gold Dome to make that happen.
You can have my baseball card collection, right? Yes. So it will go somewhere, but it's good to have a plan so I can have a little more say-so in where it goes.
That's correct. If you want to have any say in what happens with your legacy, however you define that, and that's a very personal thing,
yes.
whether you have a family, whether you're single, You may have charities that you're involved with. You say Goodwill. I mean, it was interesting. You kind of knee-jerk, you went right there.
Yeah.
But if you don't have your planning in place, it won't go to Goodwill. I can tell you that much. Right. The state did not write that in the plan.
Right. Really, the only thing I care about is, where's my dog go? Who's going to take care of my dog?
You know, pet trusts are a very popular
thing. Are they really?
Absolutely. They people care a lot about their animals, whether they have children or otherwise. You know, animals are a very polarizing, very moving movement. There's a lot of charities that work around that. My wife volunteers with some animal rescue charities. Mm-hmm. So very, very popular in my house as well.
Certainly. And so what are like the families? It sounds like when they do put their estate plan together, it evolves as the family evolves, as people's careers evolve, they move, children grow. So how often do you need to kind of revisit your plan and come and sit down with you and renegotiate some other things?
Yeah, it's a great point that you know, observation you made. I like to get people in once a year to talk. Whether we just find out that, you know, your son, you know, made the all-star team in Little League, or there's actually things that we need to plan and, you know, changes we need to make. I like to do it on an annual basis. Now, granted, life is a very busy thing. You know, we live in Atlanta, and Atlanta's not a slow-moving town by any stretch of the imagination. So it not always is convenient. It doesn't work. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people, best of intentions get, you know, set aside. But I think there's the kind of milestones. And I used to say, well, if you'd post about it on Facebook, it's probably something you should revisit your estate planning. But now people kind of post everything on Facebook.
Yeah, so that's true.
Maybe that we can't use that rule anymore. But, you know, the big life things, you know, the birth of a child, you know, the death of a loved one, not that, you know, it could be a grandparent, not that it necessarily affects your estate plan, but mm-hmm. it's a good reminder of, okay, you know, of our own, you know, mortality and things like that. And why don't we pull it out when the dust settles and take a look and make sure it's still current, you know? You get a new job, you buy or sell a house, you know, you move, you know, certainly yeah. if you move from one state to another, you want to make sure that the laws in the state that you're moving into are consistent with the laws in the state you came from, where your plan was done, you know, have an attorney take a look at it, review it. So those kind of big things, you know, if you get a big inheritance, those are, you know, again,
financial windfall.
Exactly.
Right. So once a year, you should revisit kind of where your long-term plans for your estate are. Outside of those other three, you know, areas, you know, so the will, the power of attorney, and healthcare directive, what are some other mistakes that people are making by not implementing into their estate plan?
I think one of the mistakes they make is the Google mistake. And I know we've got a technology expert here, and we all love technology. Google, like so many things, is a great tool, mm-hmm. and it can provide a lot, but it can be equally as dangerous. And what I mean by that is you can get documents and you can find a lot of things online, but do you know they're right? And do you know that they're not only are they right, but what if they're missing one word? What if they're missing one sentence? What if they're right in California, but not in Georgia, or Florida, not in Georgia?
Very true.
The problem with something like estate planning and that Google do-it-yourself thing, and I'm not against it. I mean, people build cars and people build airplanes, they build houses, whatever. I mean, I'm fine with the DIY, you know, scenario in life, and even with this. But the problem with this is you generally don't realize there was a mistake made until it's too late, meaning you need that document, and then you take it to the probate court or you show up in an attorney's office. And I'm the one that has to tell you,
sorry,
we got a problem. Well, now grandma's got Alzheimer's and she can't sign documents anymore, right? She's mm-hmm. not mentally competent. But we got this online, or we did this, or we... And then, you know, I've got to deliver the bad news,
yeah.
because nobody looked at it until it was needed, and that's when it was first discovered. And usually, there's no going back at that point in time.
So that's great advice for sure. You've probably seen that through your work and helping your clients and, you know, helping others avoid that pitfall is very good advice. Now, what happens when you have a business that's owned? Well, how does that play into all this mix? Maybe even the husband and wife owned a business together, and one of them passes. How does that play into planning for your estate? And then, you know, kind of parceling it out once the person passes on.
Yeah. So a business is an asset like any other. You know, if it's a corporation, you have stock. If it's an LLC, you have membership interest. So depending on how you plan for that, let's use the, you know, kind of a crazy example that you have minor children with no planning. So the state's written that will for these people. Guess who owns the business now? The minor children. Now, and if husband and wife ran the business and they were the only ones that had authority to sign in the bank accounts, you know, how do you get the 6-year-old to do payroll? You know, despite the fact that money may or may not still be coming in, there can be significant issues there. So the business succession planning is very important. Having, you know, catastrophe plans in place for who would take it, who would run. I mean, that's important from a data security standpoint.
Yes.
That's important from, you know, from a general environmental standpoint, meaning some sort of tragic, you know, a flood, a tornado thing, you know, the building burns down. They're important for many reasons, but it's also important from that estate planning of what if ultimately something happens to me? What happens to my employees? What happens to my business? What happens to my clients?
Mm-hmm.
You know, think of an attorney. I've got all these matters, all these cases that are pending.
Right.
If something happens to me, who picks up the pieces? And how do I protect my clients, the people that I get up every day and work for, really?
Yeah.
And how do I take care of them and make sure their needs are met because something tragic or, you know, unexpected happens to me.
So that brings up a good point. You may have an estate plan for yourself, your family, but for the business itself, kind of a plan, if something unforeseen or tragically, an asteroid comes out of the sky and hits you, then what's going to happen to all the existing work that you're doing with your clients?
Sure.
So you got to plan for that as well.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, the state will come in and do it for you, right?
Well, the state cares a lot less about what happens to my business.
Yeah.
But for taxes, than they do about what happens to my stuff personally. So.
I see. So good old state of Georgia. Now let's talk about divorce and how this all plays into that. Happens too regularly in our today's society. And so revisiting this estate plan probably is another revisit to a lot of list of things and places assets will go to when a divorce comes into play.
Sure. So some assets that, you know, are in, you know, the divorce will definitely affect any existing plan you have, depending on what kind of asset it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it also will not affect other assets. So, like, for example, your 401k at work, or your IRA, or if you work for the government, if you have a thrift, you know, it's all the same kind of account. It's a qualified, you know, retirement savings account, investment account. That, or like an insurance policy, a life insurance policy, those are what we call beneficiary designated accounts. They pass beyond your estate. They don't go to probate. They don't go in your will unless you really design them to go that way, which you can. But generally, husband and wife, you know, they both, you know, have good jobs. They get 401ks. Husband makes the beneficiary of his 401k wife. Wife makes hers husband. Bing, bang, boom. They get divorced. Now they forget to revisit this matter. They forget to do their estate planning. Divorce is a very traumatic experience, almost regardless of what the circumstances are. So they're thinking about a lot of other things. You're thinking about the kids, you know, so on and so forth. Something happens to one of them. Who gets the money? Well, the 401k says it goes to Sally. Well, Sally's my ex-wife. Well, doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's
Sally
what it
gets
says.
The money. Same with the life insurance. You know, the same thing happens if somebody dies pending a divorce. You know, you could be ready to sign the final. The judge could sign the papers tomorrow, but if you die today and hadn't changed those things over,
yeah,
you know, this estranged spouse that you're divorcing for some reason or another is going to get the benefit, you know, be the beneficiary of the money. That's number one. So you probably don't want that person to have the money.
Right.
Number two, depending on why you're getting divorced, if you have minor children, do you want that person to be in charge of the money for your minor children? You may want to choose somebody else. You know, people may have made less than good decisions during your marriage, which is why you're getting divorced.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they end up with all of your assets and they're the, you know, they're the guardian and the conservator of the estate. They handle all the cash for the children. And they basically have the discretion to do what they want with the money.
Man, I'm glad you got a guy like you on the job here, because this is stuff I don't want to have to deal with for sure. But it is part of life, and it is part of, you know, staying current with your life's situation. How do you stay current on what's trending in the industry or up to date at new laws or guidelines coming down from the government?
Lots of continuing education. I'm a member of a number of national organizations, so we collaborate, you know, quarterly, annually. There's, of course, the listservs, so which are great tools to see issues that are arising in different practices in different parts of the country. Those are always fun to read and fun to explore because, you know, a trend in California, whether it's a trend with something good, a trend with something bad, you can start to see these things happen. And you can, you know, it just gives you an idea of what the things to look for and things to implement maybe in your own planning. The tax issue, you know, thankfully or otherwise, that the government seems to like to revisit that on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And Congress likes to, you know, revise the tax code constantly. So we're always trying to stay one step ahead of them and keep things going so that all the estate and assets don't end up, you know, being taxed and ended up just going to the government, that your legacy can really go where you want it to go and that the fruits of your life's work can be divided and enjoyed by whomever you want.
So it's important for you to stay connected to people in the industry, up to date on publications and industry trends, so you can then better help your clients on a up to date basis for sure. So,
yeah.
But not only on a national level, but as you get together with people here locally, I mean, do you have like a breakfast club of estate planners that gets together and
sure,
hang out?
Sure, there's sections inside the state bar that are estate planning. Some of the national organizations I'm members of have local organizations. There's the local chapters so that we meet. We have our own local listserv, so you may have the national listserv where you hear from people in Alaska and Hawaii and California, but then there's ones that are just for Georgia, so if it was just more of a Georgia-specific thing where we wanted to talk to our colleagues, it's a relatively small community, so, you know, it's not necessarily like the personal injury attorneys, you know, Yes. It seems like everybody's a personal injury attorney.
and they're always trying to outdo each other with advertising or catchphrases or slogans or titles to their name. I mean, do you have a title for your name? Or,
I'm just Brian.
Brian M. Douglas.
If I'm the most important person in any room, unless I'm alone, I say we're all in trouble, right?
Well, let's talk about some of these partners in industry. Do you partner with other attorneys? Who do you get your referrals from primarily?
Yeah, so they come from a lot of sources. Other attorneys, divorce attorneys are great referral sources, namely because while a lot of divorce attorneys will suggest and advise their clients to do some of the things that we just talked about with the pending divorce and when it's done, they're not subject matter experts. So there's malpractice issues. They don't want to give them the wrong advice. They'd rather refer them out. Financial advisors are a huge source of referral business from that standpoint because. They know everything. They're looking at it. They're making sure that everyone's house, financially speaking, is kind of in order.
And an estate plan is part of that.
And an estate plan is absolutely part of that. Yeah. So,
what about how do you separate yourself from the other estate planners out there? What makes you different or better?
We do a couple things. I mean, I take a strong position on education, and what I mean by that is I want to spend a lot of time, very specifically and subjectively, with anyone that I sit down with that. To make sure they understand what we're doing. I mean, we've talked at a very high level about some rather, complicated topics, but we made it seem pretty easy. But people's lives, when you really get into the details of everyone's lives, things can get much more complicated. And the point is, I want you to make the plan that makes sense for you and your family. I get to make decisions for my family, not for yours, not for anyone else's. So there are the planners out there that will kind of, they're generating documents, and it's better to have something than nothing. But I want to make sure people have a very subjective, specific plan for their family that's exactly what they want. So I want to spend the time to do that. In doing so, though, the only way I can accomplish that is by educating them, is by making sure they understand it. Because I've had so many people show up with a pile of documents and I start reading and looking at it and I say, well, why did you do this? And they say, I don't know, the attorney told me to do it. And it's like, but it's not the attorney's decision. No. I mean, I can steer you and I can give you guidance. Right. And I can say, well, based on this situation, we want to go in this direction. We should talk about these things. But if you don't know what you did and why you did it, then are you really going to maintain it? Are you really going to revisit it on those milestones? Are you really going to revisit annually? Or are you going to stick it in the box or, stick in your state deposit box? I call it the Ron Popeil rotisserie chicken
Ron
cooker,
Popeil.
Right?
Set it and forget it.
There you go. Yeah. That's not what we're trying to accomplish here. It's not a set it and forget it thing. I mean, it's great to have it done and it's great to do it and have a plan in place. But as you pointed out very early in the interview, life changes very quickly. And so those documents have to change with you in order to mirror those changes in life. Otherwise, you're not protected or not as protected as you should be or as you want to be.
Do you ever see this going to more of an automated online, sit down, do it on your own time, way maybe TurboTax is, or, it's something, professionals do, but is the way technology is going these days and people want it at their fingertips, do you ever see that happening to the estate planning?
It probably will to a certain extent. On low level planning.
Simple,
very
power
simple,
of attorneys.
Using yourself as an example. You're saying, I'm a guy, I rent an apartment, I've got a dog, and
that's it.
Those types of programs could be invented. The problem is that when you get to the high level stuff and you get to the families and you get to the things, the knowledge is so much more important. Mm-hmm. And going back to what we talked about with the Google and the DIY, it's not what you know that the problem is; it's what you don't know, right?
So you
might know might know 80% of what you need to know to get an estate plan done, but that 20%, the devil's in the details.
It's
you could really get yourself in a bad spot. So that's where it gets very tricky from the automation standpoint and the artificial intelligence. But the advances that we're having in technology, I mean, lawyers may not be here in 10 years.
Yeah,
who
right.
knows? I mean, I know it's wishful thinking for most people out there.
Yeah. I wish lawyers would be robots. That's right.
There
right?
you go.
So, well, very good. Good information for sure. Sounds like you're helping families, you're helping businesses, you're helping plan for the future. Must be very rewarding to sit down and get to know these people personally and then kind of see them grow, their families grow, their businesses grow, and stay connected through the years.
It really is.
All right. Very good. Well, tell our listeners how they can find out more information about you and Brian M. Douglas and Associates.
Well, you can always call our office at 770-933-9009. or you can reach us online at AtlantaGAEstatePlanning.com.
Thank you very much, Brian, for joining us. Please come back and be a guest real soon. All that information will be posted up on our website later here today, AtlantaBusinessRadioX.com. All right, and before we introduce or reintroduce to the program, we'd like to thank our sponsor here today, Radio In My Booth, engaging a target audience at your location. If you would like to learn more about having live radio at your next trade show, conference, or expo, go to RadioInMyBooth.com. That's RadioInMyBooth.com. All right, Mike Pearson from CBI, Information Security Strategist. He's been doing this for over 25 years. He's been in the industry, so if there's anybody who has the answers, he's the guy to know. Talk to us a little more about your background. When did you get started in this field?
Sure. Good morning again. I've been in information security, like you said, for over 25 years. Founded a little company here in town, a lot of people may remember, called SecureWorks.
Okay.
That was ultimately sold to Dell and is now known as Dell SecureWorks. So
nice.
So I've been an entrepreneur in Atlanta for better part of 15 years. And now I'm at CBI, which is a great company to work for. I've been on board here since October of last year. CBI is making a pretty significant investment in the Atlanta market. We're based out of Detroit, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
But we are really focusing on Atlanta is to be our second home.
Yeah.
So
now that's an interesting transition. You went from entrepreneur back to the corporate world. A lot of people are doing that in the opposite way.
Yeah.
What were some of the reasons why there?
Sure. Well, you know, I've bounced back and forth several times. I've worked for large organizations like Symantec, which is the fourth largest software company in the world. But I keep coming back to smaller organizations. I try to follow a path that's going to be the most interesting.
So you want to stay, you know, enlightened, interested,
exactly.
In something that kind of progresses you personally and professionally. So whether it's your own business or working for a small company as well, that's
yeah, and exactly. And that's really why I love working at CBI. You know, I had a customer ask me the other day, it's like, you know, so how do you like working there? And I said, well, to be perfectly honest, it's probably the best job I ever had.
Yeah. Right, really?
So yeah, fantastic company, great group of folks over there. And, you know, we're really excited to be in this space. You know, CBI has been around for 20 years. So it's kind of what we're a 20-year-old startup.
Okay.
Right. Because we've kind of, you know, re-envisioned ourselves and, you know, and in this latest iteration, we are focusing on IT risk management. So we're focusing on getting out there and spreading the word and providing the needed resources to help lock down and to secure organizations.
And you're providing these resources to small businesses, large businesses. Who are some of your typical clients?
Yeah, our typical, you know, kind of across the board, but really our typical client's going to be, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 employees or above.
Okay.
So really more, you know, small to medium enterprise.
Sides, yeah.
Yeah. So that's who we typically work very well with.
And they come calling to you, or how are you actively out there marketing your services?
Yeah. Well, so I'm here today to tell marketing services, right?
Point, right?
So it's to get the word out. We're very well established in the Ohio Valley. Mm-hmm. Like I said, but we're making a significant investment in the South.
Yes.
And Atlanta is going to be our second home.
Yeah. And Atlanta, you know, has recently been branded as the healthcare IT capital. So is there any play for you in that space?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, healthcare is a huge, huge area that we're seeing in cybersecurity right now. In fact, you know, we used to talk a lot about credit card information being stolen mm-hmm. and then sold on the black market. But now we're seeing that healthcare records are actually the most profitable thing to sell in the black market right now.
Is that right? And why is that?
Well, think about it. You know, what's in a healthcare record?
Your social security number, your personal information, weight, and your height.
The more significant information you can have about an individual, the better you can impersonate or steal that identity, right? So, you know, we're seeing $150, $200 for, depending upon how complete the medical record is, being sold on the black market. That's per record.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, be careful with that for sure. And more medical records are going online and more of that is happening. And that is the trend in the industry. So we need to have stronger defense when it comes to cybersecurity. And from my perspective, it seems like that's all there is. There's always defense from these attacks. Is there any way to go on the offense to prevent some of these attacks?
Well, that's an interesting legal question. You know, we live in a great democracy. One of the things that kind of opens us up to that is the openness of our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a government that's actively out there launching cyber attacks against other individuals like we have nation states.
That's true.
That, you know, that is actively going on. China, North Korea, mm-hmm. two big ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's this notion of nation state hacking is actively going on and is specifically targeting individual information. So it's, you know, we don't we don't live in an organization where we can actively respond and go out and attack other folks like that. Yeah. That's not part of who we are.
No, but right? I would still think
there's it's illegal.
Yeah, so. That's right. But people still do it to us. Yeah. But I don't know if there is a way to go on the offensive, not necessarily attack them, but put up a stronger security, I guess, is the best offense. Have a stronger defense is the best offense.
You know, and I talk about this a lot. A lot of organizations that I go into and try to help out, they're not doing the basic blocking and tackling that you would expect. You know, there's always a new software coming out, new technology coming out, and they think they can purchase that as a band-aid. Mm-hmm. But they're failing to do some of the basic blocking and tackling, like having a good information security program and policies and procedures in place,
right,
and then following them. And then that brings up, you know, back to the estate planning. You know, we've got a few documents that we want to see in place too. You know, we want to see an incident response program in place. We want to see information policies and procedures in place, like a password policy.
Right.
Right. Well, how long should your password be? How are you auditing that password? Right. Mm-hmm. And we want to see a business continuity planning or a disaster recovery planning document in place.
Do you see a different need for stronger security for different types of businesses? So take an estate planner versus a bakery owner. Do they need the same type of level of security?
Well, we have a saying in the industry that goes something like this. We used to say, you know, it's not a matter of if you get breached, it's a matter of when.
Right.
Now we're saying if you don't think you've had a breach, it's only because you don't have the technology in place to know you've had a breach yet. So we're assuming that pretty much there's only two kinds of companies out there: those who know they've been breached and those who don't know they've been breached.
Right.
Yet.
So, but his records at the estate planner are much more sensitive than the ones over at the bakery, you know, with the secret recipes. I mean,
sure.
Why would China want to know that?
Well, China may not want to know that, but China nation state of hacking is really only one of the vectors. You have cyber criminals who, you know, just because you don't have the information that they're looking for, they can utilize your network resources as a hopping point to jump
off.
That's
what I've recently heard too. Like you'll come into your system and launch all the attacks out of there. So it looks like, and they're just masking it behind your.
Yeah, because I mean, ultimately the cyber criminals, if they can't monetize their efforts, then they're not going to go after the target, right?
Yeah.
So, and the only way they can monetize their efforts is to not get caught.
Well, I think some of the motive behind some of these cyber criminals is just to mess you up. I don't think they want to make any money off you anyway. They just like knowing that they can shut you down digitally.
No, that's the old way of looking at it, right?
Right.
So now we've moved from, you know, hacking for
fun.
Fun and to get your kicks and the proof that you're the elite hacker,
right
to your friends, to actually making a profit. I mean, this is big business. You know, several years ago, cybercrime eclipsed the amount of money generated by Hollywood on a yearly basis. You know, when I was mentioning healthcare records and how much it, you know, costs, $150, $200 per healthcare record.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 2005, there was over 135 million healthcare records that were exposed.
Golly.
So add that up. Right.
Yeah, that's
big,
right.
It's big business.
And there's no way to track this money or financial or the breadcrumb trail to who the individual or nation state is doing this.
Well, we've got a lovely thing out there called Bitcoin now.
Right.
Which is
a way to get paid under the table. Right. Right.
Yep. It's totally anonymous currency.
So. Yeah. And a lot of these hackers are probably using that because it is, you know, a digital type currency that no one can really trace for sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, but there seems to be a rise in a lot of this going on. Is there more people out there, you know, trying to make money on the black market, or are companies not doing enough to protect themselves?
It's a little of both. You know, there's been this notion for a while. You kind of touched on it there briefly, where, you know, I don't have anything worth stealing, right? So why should I care about it?
Steal my identity all you want. I've got very little in the bank, and I've got nothing going for myself.
So why should I bother to protect it? Right. So, but you know, your identity is worth something, and the headache you would have to go through filing the police reports,
know.
You know, getting the credit monitoring, all that. It would be a pain. There's certainly an increase. The cybercrime has increased. I pulled up some stats this morning that I was looking at from 2015. We don't have the 16 stats obviously yet, but hacking as the number one source of causing these records to be breached has significantly increased. It went up from, in 2013, from 49 million records to over, like I said, 135 million records last year.
Right.
So, and the primary vector for getting that information is now outside hackers trying to actively breach your information. Mm-hmm. So, and they may, you know, like you said, you may not have anything today,
right?
But they're going to get on your computer. They're going to install a piece of malware and some keyloggers, and they're going to utilize that computational system to go break into somebody else. Now, can you imagine if law enforcement showed up at your door and said, "Hey, you know, here's a search warrant. You know, we're going
to
confiscate your computer,
to your house."
Yeah.
Right?
So, what are you going to do about that? So everybody should be concerned. It's certainly a big business and is actively going on.
And talking about business, and so what are some of these best practices that some business owner, small business or medium-sized business can do today to make sure their plan or their system is the right one?
Sure. So I like to say, I was saying hacking's like water or electricity. It's going to follow the path of least resistance.
Okay.
Right. So if you have the basic blocking and tackling in place, like information security programs, policies and procedures.
Right.
You know, I touched on passwords briefly. You know, we talk about passwords a lot. Unfortunately, we all hate passwords, you know, but, you know, we used to say 8 characters was a long enough password, right? Now, with the computational resources and these cluster computer systems, you can crack an 8-character password in about 5 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? So you want to move that, you know, to complex passwords, even moving to passphrases. Like, I like to use an example of, like, you know, a passphrase could be something that is, you know, over 14 characters long. It could be a sentence, right? Could, you know, I love my dog.
Yeah.
She's very cute.
Right.
And she has brown hair, right?
So that could be a password.
That could be a password. It, you know, it takes a little bit longer to type out. We used to say, you know, do these crazy passwords with random characters and, you know, adding in special characters and uppercase and lowercase and numbers. But now we're finding, because of the ability of computer systems today to crack it, longer is actually better.
Wow, that is news to me for sure. And I thought my password was secure enough. So note to self, change password from Ryan is cool to something different. Okay.
Yeah, make well, sure. Another thing about passwords that we say is, like, you know, if you use your password in more than one website, it's no longer a password.
Change that too right here. Yeah. And password. Okay.
Because what we see there is that these are credential smashing attacks that are going on, where someone may have got a whole bunch of Google records, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now they know people use their Google Mail as a login, or their password that they use on their Gmail account. They're going to use it somewhere else. So now they're going to try to use that username and password at all these different sites.
Wow.
So if you use the same password more than one location, not a password.
Yeah, that's news to me as well.
Yeah,
for sure. So
if you're one more thing on that, if your password's more than 3 years old,
no longer
a password.
Yep. So you got to change that too. So
yep, exactly.
Well, good inside information for sure, not only for the individual, for business owners and for organizations along the line. And is this some of the stuff you teach over there at the Academy? CBI has their CBI Academy.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. The CBI Academy is something that we're certainly teaching. Talking a little bit about that, you know, there's a significant shortage in cybersecurity professionals right now today. And we're seeing a growth for jobs that are going to be over 9 million worldwide by 2019.
Wow.
And that's estimated to be a shortfall of about 1.5 million.
So we need them. We need more cybersecurity.
We need more cybersecurity folks. So what we do with the CBI Academy is pretty interesting. We find some folks, whether they're fresh out of college, maybe they have an information security degree, but they don't have any real world experience yet. Mm-hmm. Or we just find individuals who are interested in learning more about information security and cybersecurity. So we put them through a rigorous 12-week program, and they sign up. It's a paid internship.
Okay. Right?
They sign a 2-year contract with us. And we train them on basic principles in cybersecurity, but we also teach them how to be consultants, right? Hey, how do you polish a shoe? How do you tie your tie, right? How do you actually talk to somebody in a business engagement? So we teach them some of those soft skills as well. And then we put them back out into the workforce. Now, they're contracted with us for 2 years, but we'll put them on site at an organization that can maybe help augment some of those jobs that they can't quite fill today. And it's a more cost-effective resource versus, wow, you know, your $300-$500 an hour resource. We can get them on site for a lot more inexpensive.
So you are doing, or CBI is doing good work to cultivate the talent for tomorrow and the future, and putting those into the companies out there across the board for sure. So, but anyone can get involved with the Academy. Do you have to have that degree?
No, you don't have to have that degree. Obviously, we're looking for, you know, a certain level of experience. You know, hey, do you know how the internet works? You know, might be a good place to start. I think we're on our third Academy class right now. So we just launched this last year. We had this time well over 200 applicants that wanted to join the Academy, and we boiled that down to 12 seats. So,
and it's a 12-week program.
And it's a 12-week program.
Yeah.
Like I said, we turned them into consultants, into cybersecurity consultants, but then their continuing education keeps going on and on and on.
Where do you go to stay up to date with all the current trends? I mean, this is changing. Are you reading Hackers World magazine every night? Or, I mean, where do you go to get you know, up to date on everything?
Yeah, Hack the Planet.
Yeah.
Love Hackers World, you know, all 2,600. No, honestly, there's a lot of different places. professional associations. I'm a certified information security professional, so that's put out by IC
Squared. So people come to you to find out what's new,
so,
right?
So there's ISSA associations. We have a great InfraGuard chapter here, which is a sponsorship between or a cooperation between the FBI and local businesses to stay informed about what's going on in cybersecurity. So professional organizations, and then lots of online reading.
Yeah, but what's today is today's threat may not be tomorrow, and certainly not next year. As the world evolves and hackers get smarter, they seem to always be one step ahead of us. Like I said, I feel like I'm always on the defensive.
Well, it's an arms race. It certainly is an arms race. And it all starts with the fact that you have a vulnerable system, and new vulnerabilities are being identified all the time. That's why, you know, you probably get, you know, you see your little update on Microsoft on what we call Patch Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. Says, hey, guess what? Microsoft has downloaded, you know, these security patches. Please apply them. Well, that happens because a new vulnerability got identified into a system, right? So there's hackers that are out there that are spending their time looking for these new vulnerabilities.
And that's, yeah, for sure. So very good information for sure. We could go much deeper with this topic as it affects all of us personally, professionally, our organizations, our families for sure. But let's remind our listeners how they can find out more information about CBI.
Sure. So CBI, our website is cbihome.com. My email address is mpearson@cbihome.com. So I'd be happy to answer anybody's questions anytime.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much for sharing our information here today. And a couple more questions before we get out for you, Mike. You know, why Atlanta? You know, what brought you to Atlanta? Since this is Atlanta Business Radio, we want to get your thoughts about Atlanta and why you continue to stay here.
Sure. Well, Atlanta has been an information security hub for a long time. I actually moved up here the first time in 1998. And I moved up here specifically to get involved with information security.
Mm-hmm. What do you like to do in Atlanta in your off time?
You know, I have two kids and a great wife, and we love hiking. You know, I'm an avid Jeep driver, so okay. I've got a Jeep like going off
Jeep Wrangler?
So, yep.
Right.
Rubicon.
A Rubicon. Fact. So up on the forest trails up in North Georgia.
Absolutely.
Part of the Jeep clubs with the family or sitting at home.
Camping. Lots of fun.
And a good way to unplug from all the digital, you know, noise that's out there, which you're probably involved with on a daily work schedule, for sure.
Absolutely.
So there you heard it, folks. You can find Mike out on the trails or with his family or working hard to protect you and your organization. So thank you so much again for joining us. And Brian, one more time for you. Why Atlanta? What brought you here?
I moved down here shortly after the Olympics. When I decided to leave corporate America and venture out, you know, Atlanta was a hot, you know, town growing. Corporations are moving here. I grew up in Milwaukee or a suburb, so I was looking for warm weather.
Yeah.
So I came down here.
And been ever since, right?
And never looked back.
It's a good place for attorneys and attorneys to do business.
It's a great place for people to live. And, you know, one of the things, and I didn't realize it back then, but the growth opportunities that the city has and will continue to have are tremendous because we don't have any great geographic boundaries like most major cities in this country. You know, take a Dallas. I mean, it just keeps growing and growing and growing in every direction. And I see Atlanta doing the same thing.
Yeah, Atlanta's an international city now. It's a destination city. It's a hub for so many different types of businesses and such. So it just continues to grow for sure. So where can people find you in your off time from behind the desk over there?
Well, I've got a three-year-old and a three-month-old. So
no off time.
Yeah, no off time. Going to work is actually, you know, sometimes is a break.
Sanctuary.
Is a break from the rest of it. I play a lot of tennis.
Okay.
I like to golf, but I certainly don't have 5 hours to squeeze around in here and there.
Right.
So that, and, you know, and hanging out with my family.
Good. You can find Brian M. Douglas out there playing tennis or hanging with the family or enjoying Atlanta and everything it has to offer. So please come back and be a guest on the program again. We'd love to have you here. So thank you to Brian M. Douglas and Mike Pearson for joining us here today. And we are Business Radio X. So if your company is out there doing something interesting to genuinely serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the website at businessradiox.com and tell us your story. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.